Okay, tonight is Thursday night, June 25th, Shabbos before Parshat Chukas. This is the weekly Chumashir.
Okay, Rabotai, this week is Parshat Chukas, and I'd like to make a couple of observations. One at the very beginning of the Parsha, which presents the topic of Parah Aduma. I don't want to discuss the details of Parah Aduma, but I do want to discuss something that I mention often during the drasha. Whenever you see a halachic parsha thrust in the middle of the narrative, you have to ask yourself the question, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu write this particular mitzvah in the middle of the narrative? So this particular parsha of Parah Aduma, we know was given at least a year and a half ago. If you look at where we are in the history of Am Yisrael, where are we in Parshas Chukas? So there are one of two possibilities where we are at this particular part. One is right after the Korach rebellion, immediately after the Korach rebellion, which makes it about a year and a half after the exodus of Mitzrayim. Or, alternatively, we're coming to the end of the exile in the Midbar, and this is year 40, which things are about to change, and we're about to proceed into Eretz Yisrael. One of those two. Because there is no narrative whatsoever between year 1.5 and year 40. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is absolutely silent. Absolutely silent. And for some reason, somewhere at that point, either at the year and a half, at the beginning, which I think is the more probable time, or at the end, because the next chapter, right after Bamidbar 19, which is Parah Aduma, chapter 20, we know for a fact, is year 40. That we know for a fact, because Miriam is going to die. And Miriam dies in year 40. Aaron's going to die in year 40. So somewhere in the middle is Parah Aduma. And the question is, we know when Parah Aduma was given as a mitzvah. According to Chazal, it's quoted by Rashi in Parshas Bo, the mitzvah of Parah Aduma was given on the second day of the month of Nisan, 13 days prior to Yetzias Mitzrayim. So before Yetzias Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 15 days before the month of, before the exit of Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu summons Am Yisrael, it's Shemot chapter 12, and he says, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim, so he gives them the mitzvah of counting the new moon, and then proceeds to outline the details of the Korban Pesach, that V'yikhu Ish Seh LeBeit Avot, all of the laws of Korban Pesach are described in Shemot chapter 12. In anticipation of the Korban being brought on the afternoon of the 14th. So once you know that Am Yisrael are about to bring a Korban Pesach, it stands to reason that there would be a mitzvah of Parah Aduma, because every single Korban has to be brought to Tahara. So you could create a mikveh in Mitzrayim, just go to the Nile River. The Nile would be a very kosher mikveh. But if you're Tomei Tumas Meis, come in contact with the deceased, immersion in the mikveh is insufficient. What you have to do is have the sprinkle by the ashes of the Parah Aduma. So we know that the Parah Aduma was given on the second day of the month of Nisan, 13 days before the exodus of Mitzrayim, 12 days before the Korban Pesach was sacrificed. So that's Shemot chapter 12. We've gone through all of Sefer Shemot, all of Sefer Vayikra, and we're coming to the end of Bamidbar. Suddenly HaKadosh Baruch Hu, oh, I forgot to tell you about Parah Aduma. So I'm going to stick it in here. Doesn't stand terribly logical. So the Rav once suggested that this particular parsha here is to be understood in one of two reasons. One of two reasons as to why Parah Aduma is presented here. One is, on account of the fact which I just said, there is total ignoring of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Am Yisrael at this time. Not one word of communication for 38 and a half years. Not one. Not only there is no episode recorded in the text, God does not communicate with Moshe at all for all 38 and a half years. So just place ourselves in the Midbar. We're in the Midbar, unfamiliar territory, and God has totally, seemingly abandoned us. What might emerge at that particular time? Questions, doubts, where is the Rabbeinu Shalom? What's going on here? So in order to enable Am Yisrael to survive, HaKadosh Baruch Hu issues not a directive, but a parsha in the Torah which somehow tells us how they're going to survive these 38 and a half years. Through the rationale, the philosophy of Parah Aduma. What does Rashi say on the phrase Zot Chukat HaTorah? Let's take a look at the Rashi inside. Zot Chukat HaTorah. Rashi says, it's a very famous Rashi, says Rashi, Lefi shehasatan ve'umot ha'olam monin et Yisrael lomar. The Satan, whatever Satan is, and the nations of the world challenge Am Yisrael about this mitzvah. Ma ha-mitzvah hazot. What is the rationale for this particular mitzvah? Lefika kosav ba'chukah. Therefore, the phrase chok, chukah, is introduced for this particular mitzvah. Why? Gzeirahi milfonai. It is a decree which I have decreed. Ein licha reshut laharher acharecha. You have no right to even question it. No right to question. Don't ask me why I'm telling you to do paradu. Fine. So the advice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving to Am Yisrael by placing this particular unit, even though it doesn't belong here, belongs in Shemot chapter 12, is you want to survive 38 years in the desert? Just accept this advice, this recommendation. Do whatever I tell you and don't challenge me. You've seen what's happened in the past year and a half with people who've challenged me and started asking questions. You see what happened. You challenged me by the Egel, and X number of thousands of people died. And the consequences of the Egel are still going on until this very day. Because the Torah says at the end of the Egel experience in Shemot chapter 34, Ubiyom Pakdi. On a day in which I am angry at Am Yisrael and I decide to mete out some punishment, a little of that punishment is going to include the punishment that you deserve for the Chet HaEgel. Because the rebellion against God was so great that the punishment should have been so great, but it would have been impossible for Am Yisrael to survive. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the ultimate chesed. I will punish a little at the time of the Egel, and then mete out small doses of punishment during the next couple of thousands of years. So you know what the consequences are of challenging me. Then you challenged me in relationship to who's going to feed us meat, right? Miyachinenu basar. You challenged me in terms of kivrot ha-ta'ava. You challenged me about the water initially in Parshas B'Shalach. You know, who's going to give us water? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very, very angry each and every time. You certainly challenged me with the Meraglim episode. You got me even more annoyed when it came to Korach. And there were disastrous consequences. 14,000 people died with Korach. 14,000 people. So, as a result, God's simple advice to the peoples of Am Yisrael, just listen to the mitzvah of Parah Aduma. Just do exactly what I tell you to do. And don't ask any kashas. We're not in the question mode for the next 38 and a half years. If you do so, you'll survive. If you're going to start asking questions, and I am not in the mood to provide any answers, what's going to happen is foment is going to ferment, and what happens is then it'll lead to a decision by God to perhaps annihilate all of us. And for this reason, number one, the Parsha of Parah Aduma is placed here, despite the fact that chronologically it was given at least a year and a half ago. So the bridge between the last communication, 38 and a half years ago, and now the next communication, which will be imparted to us in chapter 20, is the mitzvah of Parah Aduma for that particular reason. That's one possibility. There is a second possibility. We know that we will read as a result of the fate of Moshe Rabbeinu, and there are many reasons, many explanations as to why Moshe was denied the opportunity to enter into Eretz Yisrael. There's a long Orach Chaim here who provides 9 different answers to potentially identify what the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu was. Bernie Stahl last night spoke about 3 or 4, called the Malbim, called the Barbanel, the Nitziv. There are many different interpretations. The Orach Chaim preceded the Nitziv and so on and so forth, and he's got his own. Everybody's got something to say. But if you're in the third grade and somebody asks you, why does Moshe Rabbeinu not get into Eretz Yisrael? You read the text. You don't know the Ramban, you don't know this one, you read the text. What does the Chumash seem to appear? HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe to hit the rock, and he did not. To talk to the rock, and he didn't. He hit the rock, and God's response is, Ya'an lo ha'emantim bi lahatishen. Ya'an lo ha'emantim bi. Now, we are told in Sefer Dvarim, at the beginning of Parshat Vo'et Chanan, so if you look it up for a second, it's the end of chapter 3 of Sefer Dvarim. It's Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chof Gimel, first Pasuk of Parshat Vo'et Chanan. So in Parshat Dvarim, Moshe repeats that he's not going into Eretz Yisrael. There, I don't want to go into that tonight, but there in Dvarim, Moshe seems to say that the transgression that caused his denial into Eretz Yisrael was the Chet HaMeraglim. Because after God denied them, he says, Gam bi hitanaf Hashem biglachem leimor, gam ata lo tovosham. God got angry at me as a result, and he said, you will not enter because of you, Am Yisrael. So Moshe, in the Dvarim, he's a little annoyed, a little angry. So he's not going into Eretz Yisrael. Now you read Parshat Vo'et Chanan, and I'm going to ask you to just read the text before you take a look at Rashi, because the text talks to us. And it says, Vo'et Chanan El Hashem Be'et Hahi Leimor. And he goes and look at Chaf Dal and Chaf Hey. I am praying to God, I beseech God to God at that time. And what does he see? What does he say? So what is his request here? What is his request? In verse 24, 20, basically 25. What's the request that he makes? Please let everyone know. I want to go into Eretz Yisrael. Very nice. So now if I ask you to read the text, and it says, Bo'et Hahi. When is exactly Bo'et Hahi? The logic would be after the chait. When God told him that what? You're not going to go into Israel. Moshe turns around to the Bani Shalom and says, Bani Shalom, I'm a good guy. Give me one chance. I know I made one. Chatasi avisi pashati lefanecha. But please allow me in. Good. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi does not interpret it that way for very good reason. This time it's one of the few times that Rashi is not relying on the Medrash. Tell me when Rashi says Bo'etahi, when is Bo'etahi? After I conquered Sichon and Og. Sichon Melech HaAmori. That event is described at the end of our Parsha. Okay? So now let's go back to Parshat Chukas. And let's see what Moshe is referring to as identified by Rashi, that is the moment when Moshe decides to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now we're going to go to our Parsha, Parshat Chukah. And it begins in chapter 21, verse 21. Vayishlach Yisrael Malachim El Sichon Melech HaEmori Leimor. Am Yisrael sent messengers to Sichon, the king of Amori, 21:21. And what does he say? Ebra ba'artzecha, I'd like to cross your land. Lo niteh b'sodeh Uvecherem, we will not cross any field or vineyard. Lo nishteme be'er, we won't exhaust your water supply by drinking the water of your wells. B'derech ha'melech ne'lech, we're going to walk down Broadway. We're not going through any backyards. Ad ashena avor gilulach, until we cross your territory and we get into our land, Eretz Yisrael. V'lo natan sichon et Yisrael avor b'dvulo. And he did not, Sichon, the king of Amori, did not grant permission. Vayesov Sichon et Kolamo, Sichon gathered his forces. Vayetze likrat Yisrael hamidbara, he goes out to the desert. Vayovo yatza, vayilochem biYisrael, and he wages war against Am Yisrael. There is no indication that what? That Am Yisrael was going to challenge him. After all, earlier in the parsha, another request was made to cross the land of Edom. And what did Edom say? Loi mitan aleph. No. And what does Moshe say? Nothing. Okay. No. We'll go around. Very simple. Yet here, what happens? They go out war. Vayakel Yisrael fi charev. Fine. Very nice. So this is the event which Rashi claims is Bo'etahi. After this particular event, Moshe what? Decides petition HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please allow me to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Where would you... So now let's go back. Let's see what happens immediately after Moshe is told you're not getting into Eretz Yisrael. So go back to chapter 20. It's verse 12, 13, and 14. 12, 13, and 14. Vayomer Hashem o Moshe ve'el Aharon. La'an lo he'emantim bi. Since you do not believe in me, la'hakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, to sanctify me in the eyes of Israel by speaking to the rock. Lochein, therefore, lo tevi'u et ha'kahal hazeh el ha'aretz asher natati lohem. You are not going to bring this land into the land. This people into the land. Hema mei merivad. These waters are now called the quarreling waters. Asher ravu b'nei Yisrael et Hashem, vayikadesh bam. So what's the next event? Vayishlach Moshe malachim yikadesh ha'melech Edom. Moshe sends messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom. And he says, you know, gives him a whole long speech. And in Pasuk Yud Zayin, he says, Na'am rabben artzacha, let us go through your land. Now, when, as we said, according to the Pshat, when would you have expected Moshe to ask for a reprieve? When? Right now.
In between the narratives.
In, right after he was told, no. But he doesn't. Why doesn't he make a request now? Okay, so say it a little sharper in light of what we said 10 minutes ago. In light of what we said 10 minutes ago. No, you can't have shikha now. That's for sure. What? Why is Parshas Chukas here, I told you? Why? Because if you want to survive, there is only one way to survive. Exactly. Well, if Moshe expected Am Yisrael to adopt that particular position of not questioning God, he had to do the same thing. He had to do the same thing. So immediately after the decree, he doesn't open up his mouth to the Rabbeinu Shalom, hey, give me another chance. No. And he says nothing. Because he was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through the mitzvah of Parah Adumah, aim, don't question me. I issued a decree, end of discussion. So why after Sichon does he feel it's appropriate after the battle against Sichon? So Rashi there finishes the thought. What did Moshe believe? Since he conquered Sichon, who was one of the Amori, the king of Amori. Amori is one of one of the seven nations. So what did Moshe believe? Shema Hutar Haneder. Shema Hutar Haneder. That's what Rashi says. What did Moshe believe? That the vow of God had been released. Hataras Nadarim. God made a vow. You are not entering into the Holy Land. Well, now that Moshe engages in conquering a nation that is one of the seven nations, and that was a mission, a charge upon the conquest of Israel, so what's running through Moshe Rabbeinu's mind was, you know what? Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed it. He's allowed to change his mind. So he changed his mind. How do I know he changed his mind? By enabling me to serve as the leader who defeats Amori. Oh, says me, maybe I've got him at a moment of weakness. And I turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he says, for etchanan el Hashem, bo'et hahi lemor. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to him? Na. What does he say in Vo'et Hanan? Rav lo, al tosef daber elai od badavar hazeh. I don't want to hear another word out of you. You made a serious mistake, Mo. I didn't change my mind. Nothing. And as a result, you have no further right to say another word, which he does not. He listens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu again. He is silenced, dead in his tracks, and he does not offer a single word of bakasha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, the question that we started with is why Parshat Chukas begins with Paraduma when historically, chronologically, it took place and should have been recorded in Parshat Bo, Shmot chapter 12, right before the giving of the Korban Pesach. But it's placed here for a reason. One, to serve as a moral lesson unto Am Yisrael. If you want to survive the next 38 and a half years, don't challenge me. You know what happens when you challenge me. The consequences are not very pleasant. Number two, it introduces the event that will take place immediately thereafter, namely the need for water. Moshe instructed to speak to the rock, and he strikes the rock. And instead of talking to HaKadosh Baruch and asking for one chance, which we know he did not do it at that time. He did it later on. How do I know? Because Rashi says, "Bo Eitai is after Sichon and Og," and he is right. How does he know that? Because in our parsha, Moshe does not open up his mouth. When the events are really unfolding, Moshe doesn't open up his mouth and say anything. And the first thing that comes out of his mouth is, "Hey, Mr. Edom, will you allow us to trespass your land?" So again, Moshe apparently learned the lesson of Am Yisrael, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ein Lecha Rishut Laharher Acharecha. There is a second reason as to why Moshe's tefillah does not occur at this particular time, not only because he was told in no less than emphatic terms, don't challenge me, do not challenge me. There is another reason. It shows something about Moshe in terms of his relationship with the people. Relationship with the people. If I were the leader of a people, if I were the leader of any organization, and I were to get fired because of events that took place by the people, nothing to me. I'm a tzaddik, like you say in Yiddish, a tzaddik impels. I do everything right. But the people themselves are not acting appropriately. And then for some reason, there's a lot of pressure to get rid of me, whatever it is. So I might be a little angry at the people. So you could have expected, as in Sefer Dvarim, Moshe doesn't hold back. That's the last 37 days of his life. Then he's getting all of his frustration, pent-up frustration, off his chest. But until that particular Sefer Dvarim, we rarely find Moshe criticizing Am Yisrael. So now, particularly if you want to say, and there is a lot of truth to it, that if you study Sefer Bamidbar, you know that the decision not to bring Am Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael with Moshe was not as a result of this Mei Meriva episode, but it undoubtedly was the Meraglim episode, where it became apparent that this generation is not going into Israel, and the leaders come along with it. As it says explicitly in Dvarim, chapter 1, verse 37. You can look it up now. Don't believe me. Look it up now. Dvarim, chapter 1, verse 37. The first episode that Moshe in Sefer Dvarim decides to give Tochacha is the episode of the Meraglim. It's the first one. Not Chet HaEgel. Chet HaEgel is later in Parshas Veschanah. In Devarim, it's the episode of the Meraglim. So look at verse 37. What does it say? Gambi hitana. Now look at the psukim before. What is it talking about? It's talking about the Meraglim. So Moshe already declares he knew at the end of the Meraglim episode that what's going to happen? He's not going in. And in fact, at the end of Bahalotcha, we know we are given a glimpse of the fact that Moshe knew already then. Because we are told at the end of Bahalotcha, chapter 11, that Nadav, that Eldad and Medad were mitnabim b'machaneh, offering prophecy. What prophecy? The Torah doesn't say what they were prophesying. Rashi says, Moshe made Yeshua Machnis. See, even right before the Meraglim episode, somebody already knew that Moshe is going to die. So, you would have expected that Moshe would lash out at the people when he is informed, and he is formally informed at the end of our parsha. Because at the Meraglim, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't tell Moshe that he's not going. We hear that out of Moshe's words in Dvarim, chapter 1, verse 37. But in Sefer Bamidbar, where the events are actually unfolding, Moshe, God never says, Mo, you're not going in because of the Meraglim. He doesn't say it. He says it in our parsha because of the hitting of the rock. And Moshe doesn't say any rebuke to Bnei Yisrael.
So why is it mentioned with the rock?
Okay, so I'm going to get to it in a second. But my point is that why is it that he doesn't? Because it shows you something about Moshe. Even at the time when he is informed of his worst defeat, his only personal defeat, what's uppermost in his mind at this time? I'm not even praying for myself. The first thing that comes out of his mouth is, I have to negotiate Am Yisrael's safe arrival into Eretz Yisrael. So that would be the easiest way to get in. So what he engages in is speaking to Edom, so that we go, okay, they say no. But the first word, Vayishlach Moshe Malachim El Melech Edom. It shows you something about the character of Moshe. He's just told by the Rabbeinu Shalom, what happened? You're not going in, and it's as if, you know, he lets it. Okay, he doesn't question because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, but there's another reason why he doesn't question. Because right now he still is the leader of Bnei Yisrael, and he puts their needs first and foremost on center stage. They're about to go in. They need the possible shortcut to avoid excessive travel. And he asks Melech Edom. Only after everything has been completed, then he goes through his own case later on. Yeah.
So correct me if I'm wrong. In a sense, it's almost as if Moshe is, for the moment, just accepting that his punishment, or pushing aside and saying, even if I'm not able to go in, I want the people to be able to be there as soon as possible.
That is correct. Precisely. Precisely. Yeah.
This may be a klutz kasha, but
there are no klutz kashas.
Okay, fine. Why by Sodom he goes around in the Mori? Like, why does he?
Because with Edom there was no battle, so there's no signals.
Edom's not one of the big seven.
It's not one of the big seven, and we are told we are now out of chapter then. And not one of the big seven. We will capture them, Liyamot HaMashiach. Not right now. Right. But they are right.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So, in relationship to your question, I really believe that the decision was made already at Chet HaEgel. Chet HaMeraglim. Why is it recorded here? Because what's recorded here is somewhat emblematic of what happened, but I don't want to really say the answer because it's going to be part of my drasha for Shabbos. So I don't want to give it away to all the marbles. Yeah. Especially at the 8:30 minyan, where there's going to be two bar mitzvahs at 8:30 minyan. So
we won't be there.
But Simcha's there, sitting in the back seat, third row, with a little safer in his hand. But he'll be there. Okay. Yeah. So that's point number two, looking at it going forward as to why Moshe doesn't say anything. There is another something else that is critical here. We know that several things take place in Parshas Chukas, in chapter 20 and 21. The first thing that happens in chapter 20 is that Miriam dies. Vatama Shom Miriam Vati Kaver Shom. That's the first thing that happens. The second, then comes the rebellion with the water. Then at the end of that particular parsha, it says in 21, in verse 20, verses 23, 24, 25, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Aaron Behor Ahor Al Givul Eretz Edom Lemor. God speaks to Moshe and Aaron at the Hor Hahor on the border of Eretz Edom. Ye'osef Aharon Elamav. Kilo Yavol Haaretz Hashem Natati Lebnei Yisrael. He too will not come into Israel. So last night Bernie Stoll spoke about it. It's a very good question. Why does Aaron have to die? Aaron was not told to speak to the rock, and what avera did he do that he was punished not to go into Israel? And people struggle with it. Really difficult struggle. What? Yeah, so that's what the Abarbanel says. So it's got nothing to do with here, it's Cheta Egel. That's correct, that's exactly what Abarbanel says. So, again, then he says, so Aaron dies here. Kachas Aaron ve'et Elazar b'no v'halotam ho'ahor. Take off Aaron's clothing, put them on Elazar, and that's exactly what happens. So when a second event that takes place is a death of Aharon. Death of Aaron. Then, what happens in chapter 21, verse 4? Something else happens. Vayisu mehor ha'har derech yam suf lizbov et eretz Canaan. Actually, look at the beginning of 21. Vayishma haknani melech harad yoshev hanegev. Ki ba Yisrael derecho atarim vayilachem biYisrael vayish mimenu shevi. The Kanani heard something. Vayishma haKanani, says Rashi. Mashemua, what did he hear? That Aaron died. Aaron died. So what did they do? They attacked and they took home, instead of a Pontiac, they took a Chevy. Vayish mimenu shevi. Took a Chevy home. So they took captives. Chazal understood that this is a transition. This particular parak is a transitional parak from the time that Am Yisrael will be guided by miraculous intervention by God to a time when you're going to have to handle things yourself. No more divine intervention. Because the conquest of Israel is not going to be like the conquest of Amalek. Not going to be that way. When Moshe Rabbeinu puts his hands in heaven, and all of a sudden the Amalek dies. This is going to be a real battle with real casualties and real where you suffer losses. There's no doubt. So the transition that is taking place between Am Yisrael being guided by Lema'ala Miderech HaTeva, by events which are above and beyond the world of nature, and the transition preparing them to enter Eretz Yisrael, where the capture of Eretz Yisrael is only going to be through normal, natural means, this particular perek represents the transition. So how do we symbolize this transition? Their source of water dies. Who is the source of water? Miriam. Miriam, Bezchut Miriam was the Be'er. Immediately after she dies, everybody's complaining, so there's no water. So Moshe has to go through that little rigmarole about speaking to the rock. What did Aaron, what was Bezichus whom? Was there the Anane Kavod? It was Bezichus Aaron. So Rashi says in Parshas Beshalach, the first time that the Ananim are there, to interfere what? Balistiraot, ballistic missiles. That's what the Anani Kavod were designed for, to stop balistiraot, ballistic missiles which were shot against Am Yisrael. They were intercepted by the Anan. As soon as the Anani Kavod disappears because of the death of Aaron, Kanani recognizes that Am Yisrael are vulnerable. Therefore, Vayishma Kanani Melech HaRat, they hear and they come attacking. Because that is a consequence of no longer having the opportunity to be guided by the hand of God directly. You have to be ready to fend off all challenges at that particular time, whether you're ready for it or not. And you know, things happen at that time. Things happen. Something happened to the people that, you know, they obviously had to make this neder unto God. And I don't think they had to make the neder unto God if they're winning the battle right all the time. They were losing the battle. And therefore they had to make this vow in Nason Titeinu Tamazeh, the Hacharamti, I'll put into Cheir, I'll donate to God everything that I get. So a second issue here is the absence of the Anan, which was as Bezuchut Aharon. Then immediately thereafter, in verse 4, all of a sudden people are complaining about what? We're sick and tired of the man. What? Now that's happened before too. Why is it happening right now? Why is it happening? Because they are already anticipating that who's going to die? Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die. Because Moshe is what? Is responsible, because Moshe was the man. So once they see that Aaron died, once they see that Miriam dies, we're going to bring about the change without waiting until Moshe Rabbeinu dies. We're starting to complain about the man right here and now. We want to start having normal, regular food, and you know, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. All right. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to them immediately, and he says, "Okay, you want things to happen naturally? Be my guest. Well, in the desert there are snakes. Okay, so you're attacked by snakes. That's exactly why it happens here, because they themselves opened up their mouths and said." We want things to proceed naturally. Well, in your desert, you're going to be attacked by snakes. Let's see what happens. And unfortunately, people were bitten by snakes, and they died. And they died. So Moshe had to intervene once again, almost one final time, and say, you know, whoever take this Nechash HaNechoshes, his rod, and make it into a snake, and so on, take a snake, make it into Nechash HaNechoshes, and anybody who looks at the Nechash HaNechoshes, he will survive. Don't ask me what... how that happened. Parshanim are incredibly troubled by this particular story because it's something which is out of the, you know, it sounds like a little magical. You look at a staff and suddenly you're saved. He beat Elan and Elachash. You know, it's a little difficult to explain rationally simply by looking at the text. Extremely difficult to understand it. So I want to just wrap up. So what did we say? We raised the question at the very beginning about the placement of Bamidbar Yotes. And I say it every time. Whenever you read the narrative and you see a halacha inserted, that's the first question you have to ask. Why is a halacha inserted in the midst of a presentation of narrative? So we made two suggestions, one going backwards, one going forward. The one going backward is advice to Am Yisrael never to question anything, and they will not hear from God for the next 38 and a half years. The only way to survive is don't question. We also believe it goes forward. It helps explain why Moshe did not raise a whimper after he was told that I am going to... you're going to die, you're not entering Eretz Yisrael. And that which it says, Bo'ei Tahi... But Eitahi, it says Rashi, only after the battle of Sichon and Og. So Moshe inferred that since Sichon was Melech Amori, one of the seven nations, he believed that there was Hatarat Nedarim, the vow had been released, therefore he tried to seize that moment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu silenced him almost immediately and he said, Al Tosef Eilai Rab Bazeh, I don't want to hear anymore. Moshe does not talk anymore because he understands that the vow had not been rescinded. It also tells us an enormous amount about the character of Moshe, that rather than even thinking about praying for himself, he recognized he has to tend to the needs of the incoming generation going into Eretz Yisrael, and their first concern is to shorten their stay in the desert and enable them to enter into Eretz Yisrael as soon as possible. And then the three the episodes which are recorded shit-shot, one after the other. The death of Miriam, the death of Aaron, and the rebellion against the Slav, all indicative of the fact that things are about to change, that you're going to have to engage in conquest of Eretz Yisrael only through normal means. Here is the preparation, even you're not in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore these three events are recorded in rapid succession of one another. Stop here, Odam Maruf.
Shabbat. Next week is same time, 8:30 is Yom Kippur Caps. Most of you know who he is, and he'll be speaking.